Welcome to another midweek lesson from Grace Christian Assembly. Open your Bible and join us as we dig into the Word. Now, here's our teacher, Jim McLarty.
We are in 1 Kings 15, picking up right where we left off. And we will be in 1 Kings 15 and 16 tonight and next Wednesday. The Wednesday after that is the conference in Gladeville, so I will encourage you all to come over there. This Sunday, I'll be teaching out of the book of Matthew, and then the following Sunday, David Morris will be here because he's coming to town for the conference. And then we'll take a breath after the Gladeville conference, and suddenly it's going to be homecoming. That's happening right at the top of April. So a lot of stuff on our agenda right around the corner. Everybody in 1 Kings chapter 15? We're going to back up just slightly and fill in a few blanks. Every once in a while, as we've been working through 1 Kings, we have also gone to 1 and 2 Chronicles and filled in some of the blanks. And actually, 1 and 2 Chronicles does tell us a little bit more about what we read at the end of chapter 14. And I'm sure all of you have retained every detail of what we talked about in chapter 14 3 weeks ago, right? Everybody's still okay, fine. Starting at chapter 14, verse 21, we read about the trouble that Rehoboam, who is the son of Solomon, caused for Judah, the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom had been under the rule of Jeroboam, and Jeroboam, of course, caused the people of the northern tribes to go away from the worship of God, to apostatize, even built a couple of golden calves in Beersheba and in Dan, and he told the people to come and worship there, that that was the more convenient way to worship. It's not worth going through all that trouble to go down there to Jerusalem. Of course, he did those things and made those decisions based on political expediency. He recognized that if the people ever went back to worship God correctly in the temple in Jerusalem, that would create that kindredship between brethren Israelites again, and he would lose his political authority and his political power. And so he gave them an alternative way to worship and an alternative place and an alternative priesthood and an alternative religion based on idol worship. And of course, God then started bringing trouble and wars down on them, and there were wars and battles between the northern and southern kingdoms, despite the fact that the prophets of God admonished them not to, and said, "Your brethren, don't fight against each other." Nevertheless, the tension between them grew so hot and heavy and thick that there was a very genuine animosity between the two of them that existed all the way into the later days of the prophets, even to the days of Ezekiel, where when he held the two sticks in his hands, and the two sticks represented Israel and Judah, one of the things that those two sticks in the hands of Ezekiel were to represent was that God was going to someday take away the enmity that was between the northern tribes and the southern tribes. But this enmity, this againstness, the warring between them, started very early on because Jeroboam wanted to set himself up in a permanent way as king, and so he kept the people from going to Jerusalem to worship. So then Rehoboam, who did have the sons of Aaron as priests and who did have the temple to worship at Jerusalem, he nevertheless also led the people astray, and as a result, God brought the king of Egypt down on them, and the king of Egypt carried away all of the treasures that were in the king's house and were in the temple. And that's the last thing we read last week. Let's start at verse 21 of 1 Kings 14. I said last week, I mean 3 weeks ago, the last time that we were together here studying 1 Kings. Verse 21, now Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, reigned in Judah. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he became king, and he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which the Lord had chosen from all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. and his mother's name was Naamah the Ammonitess. And Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they provoked him to jealousy more than all their fathers had done with the sins which they committed. For they also built for themselves high places and sacred pillars and asherim on every high hill and beneath every luxuriant tree. And there were also male cult prostitutes in the land. And they did according to all the abominations of the nations which the Lord dispossessed before the sons of Israel. Now it came about in the fifth year of King Rehoboam that Shishak, the king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem. And he took away the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house. And he took everything, even taking all the shields of gold which Solomon had made. So King Rehoboam made shields of bronze in their place and committed them to the care of the commanders of the guard who guarded the doorway of the king's house. Then it happened, as often as the king entered the house of the Lord, that the guards would carry them and would bring them back into the guard's room. And then we get the summary statement in verse 29. Now the rest of the acts of Rehoboam and all that he did, are they not written in the books of the chronicles of the kings of Judah? And there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam continually. And Rehoboam slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. And his mother's name was Naamah the Ammonitess. And Abijam, his son, became king in his place. And chapter 15 then tells us about Abijam. Now, Abijam is only going to rule for 3 years. Very short rule. So that God can get to King Asa. And King Asa is going to rule the southern kingdom for 41 years. And King Asa is a good king, and he is being given to Jerusalem and given to the southern kingdom because God remembers the promises he made to David. And he remembers that David followed in his footsteps, and so he gives the southern kingdom, Judah, yet another good king. But before we get into chapter 15, keep your finger there in 1 Kings 15 and turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 12. Because 2 Chronicles chapter 12 tells us much more about Shishak of Egypt invading Judah. Gives us much more detail about it. So let's fill in those blanks and then we'll move into chapter 15. Chapter 12, 2 Chronicles, verse 1 says, "And it took place when the kingdom of Rehoboam was established and strong that he and all Israel with him forsook the law of the Lord." Isn't that the pattern we see over and over and over? All the way through the Exodus, early on as Israel is finally established and they have peace round about from all their enemies and they get fat and they get well fed and they're okay. That's when they turn their back on God. And that is really human history. I've pointed this out time and time and time again. And God knows this about people. God knows that people will come to him when he gives them hard times. And this is a method that God uses frequently with the Israelites to bring them back to himself. He takes them through hardship until they have nowhere to cry but to him, and then they'll return to him again, and then he'll forgive them. The book of Judges is all about that. The whole book of Judges, we saw that pattern over and over again where God would send them a judge, and the judge would fight for them, and there would be peace round about. There'd be 40 years of peace, and everything's good again, and Israel's okay again. And then the next generation would come along that didn't remember God's deliverance. All they know is we're rich, and we don't have any needs, and we're fine, and we're good, so who needs God? Think about, if you think that's just old stuff and it doesn't happen anymore, think about the attitude in America right after 9/11. That's right. When you had the entire Congress not only going to services there at the Capitol Cathedral. Is that what it's called? Well, I'm calling it that now. I have officially named it the Capitol Cathedral. All of the senators and the congressmen, everybody was there. The president was there. Everybody, heads of state, everybody there talking about God protect America, God bless America. They stood on the Capitol steps and saying, God bless America, because we had been attacked. And so everybody ran to God. We need God. Where's God in all this? And we're what? That was 2001. We're now in 2015. That's 14 years, basically. How often do you hear God spoken of out of Washington now? In fact, you even have people debating at this moment whether the president of the United States is even a Christian. And there are some who say yes, and some who say no, and some who say he's Muslim, and some who say... this is what the level of debate is at in our nation right now, because Christianity itself is so suppressed and so looked down on by the intelligentsia, the upper classes that lead our nation. Hey, by the way, are you aware of what's going to happen tomorrow? Tomorrow, five people who are part of a council that is not even designated by the Constitution anywhere, the FCC, they're going to vote, three Democrats and two Republicans, that have said, let's not vote on this yet, let's let the people actually see what we're voting on. And the three Democrats have said, no, let's vote instead and not tell anybody what we're voting on. And this is called net neutrality. Are you familiar with this?
Yes.
Yeah, so the whole idea of net neutrality is the idea that the government will now regulate the internet as a public utility the same way that they regulate the airwaves for television and radio. Okay, so what is the chief thing that the FCC does when they regulate TV and radio? Oh, that's right, they decide what is acceptable content. The FCC's primary job is to protect the American public from content that the government thinks is inappropriate for American people to see or hear. Now they want to do that with the internet, because the internet is, after all, the last true communication vehicle that is still free on the planet. So if you can regulate it and you can say what can and cannot be said on the internet, then you can suppress Christianity on the internet, which is just another brick in that wall where the government continues to encroach on the church everywhere that it possibly can. And once they can say what is acceptable and not acceptable in the internet, then they're allowed to say what kind of speech is acceptable speech and what isn't. And three people, three Democrats, who are part of a council that, like I said, isn't even prescribed in our Constitution, three people are going to vote on that and impose the government on the entire internet. And they have convinced people that this is good because it's going to make it more equal in terms of how much people get charged or have to pay, which gets all the liberal-minded folk going, yeah, government, you show those big corporations, when in fact that's not what it's about at all. So in any case, my point is this. Chapter 12, verse 1 of 2 Chronicles, we read, it took place that when the kingdom of Rehoboam was established and strong, that he and all Israel forsook the law of the Lord. And that's the way it always happens. Whenever people feel strong, whenever they feel established, whenever they feel okay, well-fed, well-dressed, whenever they feel self-sufficient, then they don't need God. Let trouble come. Let trials come. Let an enemy attack. Let sickness come. Let something happen, and they will cry to God. I heard a newsman a week ago actually use the phrase when trying to describe the snowpocalypse that was happening up in the northeast of our nation. He actually said, this is practically biblical. Well, what was he saying? He was saying, this is so bad that it's the kind of thing that makes you think, This is God. God has to be in this somewhere, because there's no other way to explain this kind of trouble. Because when there's trouble, people think about God. But when it's good, when they're fine, when they're fat, when they're happy, then they're like, ah, doesn't matter, God, whatever, we don't have to follow his law. And we're seeing that happen right now in America. What America doesn't seem to recognize, the history of the world is the same. It's the same pattern over and over and over again, which is whenever any people group gets like that, God crushes them. Mm-hmm. And America's so full of itself right now. Just one great, big, gigantic, massive exercise of ego coming out of Washington right now. that we are throwing God off completely, thinking we'll do things our way. Okay, I'm going to get off my soapbox now and get back to the text. But I think you've got my point. This pattern emerges time and time again throughout the Bible. And yet, people who don't know their Bible can't understand history, and so they are doomed to repeat history. And boy, America had better wake up. Tom was nodding furiously, but the people on the internet couldn't hear the rattling, and so they didn't know that you were nodding furiously. It took place when the kingdom of Rehoboam was established and strong, that he and all Israel with him forsook the law of the Lord. And it came about in King Rehoboam's fifth year, because they had been unfaithful to the Lord, that Shishak, the king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem. So why did Shishak come up? As a punishment from God. The same way that God protected Israel from all their enemies and gave them peace round about, that's the same God who could take away that protection and bring their enemies against them. And how did he come up? Verse 3, with 1,200 chariots, 60,000 horsemen, and the people who came with him from Egypt were without number. The Lubim and the Sukkim and the Ethiopians, and he captured the fortified cities of Judah and came as far as Jerusalem. Then Shemaiah the prophet came to Rehoboam and the princes of Judah who had gathered at Jerusalem because of Shishak. And he said to them, thus says the Lord God, you have forsaken me, so I have forsaken you too, Shishak. Look at that language. You have forsaken me, so I have forsaken you to Shishak. These are not just the machinations of human beings wanting to conquer and build empires and kingdoms. This is God who is in charge of every heartbeat of every king and every nation that he raises up and every nation that he knocks down. This is God saying, you are my people, I chose you, and you have not been faithful to me despite all the ways that I have blessed you and protected you and given you rest round about from all your enemies, and yet you would not listen to me and do things my way. Therefore, I have brought your enemies against you. So he captured the fortified cities of Judah and came as far as Jerusalem. So Shemaiah said, thus says the Lord, you have forsaken me, so I also have forsaken you too, Shishak. So the princes of Israel and the king humbled themselves and said, the Lord is righteous. When the Lord saw that they humbled themselves, the word of the Lord came to Shemaiah again, saying, they have humbled themselves, so I will not destroy them, but I will grant them some measure of deliverance, and my wrath shall not be poured out on Jerusalem by means of Shishak. Now look at what that means. That means the damage that Shishak did was the amount of damage God allowed him to do. You're talking about a foreign, unbelieving king of Egypt, who God is using as a sledgehammer to punish the children of Israel for not doing things his way, but because they repented, God limited what the foreign, unbelieving king could do. Because that's the kind of sovereignty we're talking about. God, who's in charge of everything, can say, you can punish them and you can do this much, but you can't do any more than that. Just like God telling Satan, you can touch Job, but you can't kill him, because God is in charge. So when the Lord saw that they humbled themselves, the word of the Lord came to Shemaiah, saying, they have humbled themselves, so I will not destroy them, but I will grant them some measure of deliverance, and my wrath shall not be poured out on Jerusalem by means of Shishak. And they will become his slaves, so that they may learn the difference between my service and the service of the kingdoms of the countries. Listen to what God said. He said, I'm going to destroy them financially so that they are indebted to and enslaved to Shishak in Egypt. And the reason I'm doing that is because they didn't want to serve me. So I'm going to demonstrate to them the difference between serving me and serving other nations. Either way, you're going to serve somebody. And you're either going to serve God or you're going to serve other men. That's right. And that is, again, the exact dynamic that is happening in America right now. You're either going to serve this consistently God-forsaken government, or you're going to serve God. But you can't serve both. Even Jesus himself, when confronted with the question, should we pay taxes to Caesar, said, whose inscription is on the coin? And they said, it's Caesar's inscription on the coin. And he said, then render to Caesar what is Caesar's, but render to God what belongs to God, which was his way of saying, Caesar's not God. Caesar's just a king. And if he imposes a tax on you with money that has his picture on it, that's his money to start with. So give him the tax that's due to him. But don't pretend that that's the same as worshiping God. You still render to God what belongs to God. Understand the difference? So God says, okay, you don't want to serve me? Fine, I'll make you serve other men. And you'll find out what the difference is. I figure it didn't take them very long to figure out it was better when we served God. Everyone's nodding. Yeah, when we served God, let's see, we had plenty of food and we had rest round about from our enemies and we had good kings and it was all pretty good. We don't do things God's way and now Egypt comes in, takes all our wealth, is going to destroy us financially as a nation. So Shishak, verse 9, king of Egypt came up against Jerusalem and took the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's palace. He took everything. He even took the golden shields which Solomon had made. Then King Rehoboam made shields of bronze in their place and committed them to the care of the commanders of the guard who guarded the door to the king's house. And it happened as often as the king entered the house of the Lord, the guards came and carried them, the shields, and brought them back to the guard's room. And when he humbled himself, the anger of the Lord turned away from him so as not to destroy him completely, and also conditions were good in Jerusalem, in Judah. So when the king humbled himself and when the people humbled themselves, conditions were good in Judah. When they rebelled against God, God brought their enemies against them to destroy them financially and put them into servitude to other kings. So any rational person would go, it's just better to do things God's way. But I think this is yet again a demonstration of the depth of human depravity. That as soon as things go well, we think we did it. As soon as things are good for us, we think self-made man. All this that I got through my hard work. I earned this. I deserve this. I've worked for all this. Well, I don't need God then because I'm capable. I'm fully self-sufficient. I can do what I want to do. And every time you act like that, God, if he cares for you, is going to bring you back to a state of humility. And if he has to do it the hard way, he'll do it the hard way. Because he loves you that much. If he just leaves you to yourself, you will continue to wander down that road of rebellion and apostasy, and you'll just fall permanently into a ditch and be judged by him. But if he loves you, if you are his people, Israel are his chosen people, and that's why he keeps correcting them and redrawing them and reestablishing them and teaching them over and over and over again, you can see why he said that they were a hard-hearted people. Because after all this history, they continue to rebel. But then again, after the history of America and all the ways that God has blessed us, protected us, how long have we had peace from our enemies? I mean, we have been so safe and secure for so long. Anyway, smart people would figure out it was better to do things God's way, and when they did it, then conditions were good in Judah. So King Rehoboam strengthened himself in Jerusalem, and he reigned. And Rehoboam was 41 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which the Lord had chosen from all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. And his mother's name was Naamah the Ammonitess. And he did evil because he did not set his heart to seek the Lord. Now the acts of Rehoboam, from first to last, Are they not written in the records of Shemaiah the prophet and of Iddo the seer according to the genealogical enrollment? Sadly, we don't have those books anymore. Those are things that were lost to antiquity, and they seem to be just sort of the day-to-day and year-to-year records of what the various kings did. But here again we read, and there were wars between Rehoboam and Jeroboam continually. And Rehoboam slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, and his son Abijah became king in his place. Now we'll start talking about Abijah. Now Abijah and Asa are both sons of a woman named Maacah. And if you go back in 2 Chronicles here, back one chapter to chapter 11, verse 18, we'll read a little bit about her for a moment, and you will understand why this is the particular lineage, Abijah to Asa, that became kings. In verse 18 of chapter 11, we read, "Then Rehoboam took as a wife Mahalath, the daughter of Jeremoth, the son of David and of Abihail, the daughter of Eliab, the son of Jesse, and she bore him sons, Jeush, Samariah, and Zaham. And after her, he took Maacah, the daughter of Absalom." Who is Absalom? You remember Absalom? And it's one of the sons of David. So this is all family, and you can see why she, Maacah, being a daughter of Absalom, she's part of that direct descendant of David kingly line. And she bore to him Abijah and Attai and Ziza and Shelomith. And Rehoboam loved Maacah, the daughter of Absalom, more than all his other wives and concubines, for he had taken 18 wives and 60 concubines and fathered 28 sons and 60 daughters. And Rehoboam appointed Abijah, the son of Maacah, as head and leader among his brothers, for he intended to make him king. And he acted wisely, and he distributed some of his sons through all the territories of Judah and Benjamin to all the fortified cities, and he gave them food in abundance, and he sought many wives for them. So this Maacah, who is a direct descendant of David through Absalom, is the mother of the next couple of kings, mother and grandmother and great-grandmother, of Abijah and then of Asa. Okay, that was all, actually, believe it or not, introduction to get us to chapter 15 of 1 Kings. So back to 1 Kings chapter 15, and we will be back in 2 Chronicles later on as we work our way through the story of Asa, because Asa is a fascinating character who's going to rule over the southern kingdom for 41 years. And during those 41 years, there's a succession of kings that are in the northern kingdom. And as I've told you repeatedly, where the northern kingdom is concerned, they just keep going from bad to worse where kings are concerned. But because of promises God made to David, every once in a while a good king shows up in the southern kingdom, and Asa is one of those. Got it? Now, as I mentioned 3 weeks ago, chapter 15 and chapter 16 of 1 Kings are kind of transition chapters, taking you from Solomon and the division of the kingdoms, Rehoboam and Jeroboam. The book then picks up speed in order to get you to chapter 17, where we're introduced to Elijah. And then the book slows down again when we start talking about Ahab, the wicked king, and his wife,
Jezebel.
Yeah, see, we know that name. And so the end of 1 Kings is going to slow down again, but these two chapters move pretty quickly through a succession of kings to just kind of transition us from the split of the two kingdoms to the introduction of Elijah, and then Elijah looms large through the rest of the Bible, and when we get to him, we'll have to talk a lot about the Elijah connection to the New Testament and to Christ and to the day of the Lord. Elijah is a very big deal. So we'll get there in a few weeks. Chapter 15, verse 1. "Now in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, Abijam became king over Judah. He reigned 3 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom, that's Absalom. And he walked in all the sins of his father, which he had committed before him. And his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, like the heart of his father David. But, look at this verse. But for David's sake, the Lord his God gave him a lamp in Jerusalem to raise up his son after him and to establish Jerusalem. That's Asa. So why did this Abijam only rule for 3 years? Because he wasn't particularly good. Now, he did do something that is really fairly heroic, and we're going to read about it over there in 2 Chronicles, where he did go march into the northern kingdom and say, you need to come back and worship the real God. So he did do one thing that was fairly heroic. But what we hear in summary about him is that he didn't walk in all the ways of God. He walked in the sins that his father had committed before him. His heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, like the heart of his father David. But for David's sake, the Lord his God gave him a lamp in Jerusalem to raise up his son after him and to establish Jerusalem. Because David did what was right in the sight of the Lord and had not turned aside from anything that he commanded him all the days of his life, except in the case of Uriah the Hittite. And there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all the days of his life. Now the rest of the acts of Abijam and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? And there was war between Abijam and Jeroboam. And Abijam slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa, his son, became king in his place. So in the 20th year of Jeroboam, the king of Israel, the northern tribes, Asa began to reign as king of Judah, the southern tribes. And he reigned 41 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maakah, the daughter of Abishalom. Now, even though it says mother there, she's grandmother at this point. The same way that David is referred to as their father, when in fact, if you're talking about Asa, David is his great-great-grandfather. But the way Hebrew reckoning and genealogies were figured, she was the female progenitor, so she's called the mother. But actually, she's the grandmother at that point. Asa did, verse 11, Asa did what was right in the sight of the Lord, like David his father. He also put away the male cult prostitutes from the land, and he removed all the idols which his fathers had made, and he also removed Maakah, his mother, from being queen mother, because she had made a horrid image as an Asherah, which means as an object of worship, and Asa cut down her horrid image and burned it at the brook Kidron. But the high places were not taken away. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly devoted to the Lord all his days, and he brought into the house of the Lord the dedicated things of his father and his own dedicated things, silver and gold and utensils. Now there was war between Asa and Baasha, the king of Israel, all their days. Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and fortified Ramah in order to prevent anyone from going out or coming in to Asa, the king of Judah. Way back when, during the conflicts between Jeroboam and Rehoboam, you may recall that we talked about this, that there was a ridge of hills that separate the southern kingdom from the northern and separate Jerusalem from the northern kingdoms. And there was one main valley that they could come through, which is referred to as Ramah. And Jeroboam right away went to work blocking up that valley so that people couldn't travel that way. And if you could just block that pathway to Jerusalem, you could keep your people from going down into Jerusalem and participating in the worship there. So to get some idea of why that was happening, we are going to go back to 2 Chronicles for a moment. So to get some sense of why this was happening, there was an ongoing conflict, not just based in a hatred, but also based in a desire to bring the northern kingdom back under the headship of the southern king, because the descendants of David were the only ones that were the kings by divine decree, by divine right, the descendants of David should have been ruling over all 12 tribes. And so the descendants of David did put in some amount of effort to open up that pathway again and go up and tell people, come back, join us. So go to 2 Chronicles again. 2 Chronicles 13, verse 1. In the 18th year of King Jeroboam, Abijah became king over Judah. And he reigned 3 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. And there was war between Abijah and Jeroboam. And Abijah began the battle with an army of valiant warriors, 400,000 chosen men. And Jeroboam drew up in battle formation against him with 800,000 chosen men who were valiant warriors. And Abijah stood on Mount Zemaraim in the hill country of Ephraim. And he said, listen to me, Jeroboam and all Israel. Do you not know that the Lord God of Israel gave the rule over Israel forever to David and his sons by a covenant of salt? What that means is by an unchanging covenant. This is a covenant that God made with David that they would always rule. His descendants would always rule over Israel. Yet, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, the servant of Solomon, the son of David, rose up and rebelled against his master, and worthless men gathered around him, scoundrels who proved too strong for Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, when he was young and timid and could not hold his own against them. So now you intend to resist the kingdom of the Lord through the sons of David, being a great multitude and having with you the golden calves which Jeroboam made for gods for you. Have you not driven out the priests of the Lord, the sons of Aaron and the Levites, and made for yourselves priests like the peoples of the other lands? Whoever comes to consecrate himself with a young bull and seven rams, even he may become a priest of what are not gods. But as for us, the Lord is our God, for we have not forsaken him. And the sons of Aaron are ministering to the Lord as priests, and the Levites attend to their work. And every morning and evening they burn to the Lord burnt offerings and fragrant incense, and the showbread is set on a clean table, and the golden lampstand with its lamps is ready to light every evening, for we keep the charge of the Lord our God, but you have forsaken him. Now behold, God is with us as our head, and his priests with the signal trumpets to sound the alarm against you, O sons of Israel, do not fight against the Lord of your fathers, for you will not succeed. But Jeroboam had set an ambush to come in from the rear so that Israel was in front of Judah and the ambush was behind them. And when Judah turned around, behold, they were attacked both front and rear. So they cried to the Lord and the priests blew the trumpet and the men of Judah raised a war cry. And when the men of Judah raised the war cry, then it was that God routed Jeroboam and all Israel before Abijah and Judah. And when the sons of Israel fled before Judah, God gave them into their hand, and Abijah and his people defeated them with a great slaughter, so that 500,000 chosen men of Israel fell slain. Thus the sons of Israel were subdued at that time, and the sons of Judah conquered because they trusted in the Lord their God of their fathers. And Abijah pursued Jeroboam and captured from him several cities, Bethel with its villages, Jeshanah with its villages, and Ephron with its villages. And then we read that Jeroboam died. Jeroboam did not again recover strength in the days of Abijah, and the Lord struck him and he died. And Abijah became powerful and he took 14 wives to himself and became the father of 22 sons and 16 daughters. And the rest of the acts of Abijah and his ways and his words are written in the treatise of the prophet Iddo. He had a very, very busy 3 years. So he was only king for 3 years, but one thing he did do was that he did go into Israel and say, we've got the right king, and we've got the right worship, and we've got the right temple, and we've got the right priests, and you need to return to us. And then 500,000 1,000 Israelites of the northern tribes were conquered because God was with Judah that day, because they were on the side of God that day. And so, as you see, there was this conflict between the northern and the southern kingdoms over what was proper worship. And you can see now why the northern kings would try to block people from going through the pathway into Jerusalem to go back and join their brethren from the south. Because their brethren from the south were causing these kind of incursions into the north and saying, "We have the right thing, come join us." And then, of course, lots of people did. So that's why, back in 1 Kings 15, that is why Baasha, the king of Israel, went up against Judah and fortified Ramah in order to prevent anyone from going out or coming in to Asa, the king of Judah. You understand all that now? Mm-hmm. You see the conflict and you see the pressure? Then Asa, verse 18 of 1 Kings 15, Asa took all the silver and the gold which were left in the treasuries of the house of the Lord and the treasuries of the king's house and delivered them into the hands of his servants. And King Asa sent to Ben-Hadad, the son of Tabramon, who was the son of Hezion, the king of Aram, who lived in Damascus, saying, "Let there be a treaty between you and me and between my father and your father. Behold, I have sent you a present of silver and gold. Go break your treaty with Baasha, the king of Israel, so that he will withdraw from me." So Ben-Hadad listened to King Asa and sent the commanders of his armies to the cities of Israel and conquered Ajan and Dan and Abel-Beth-Ma'akah and all of Chinneroth, besides all of the lands of Naphtali. And it came about when Baasha heard it that he ceased fortifying Ramah, and he remained in Tizrah. Then King Asa made a proclamation to all Judah. None was exempt. And they carried away the stones of Ramah and its timber, which Baasha had built. And King Asa built with them Geba of Benjamin and Mizpah. Now the rest of the acts of Asa and all his might and all that he did and all the cities that he built, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? But in the time of his old age, he was diseased in his feet. And Asa slept with his fathers, and he was buried with his fathers in the city of David, his father. And Jehoshaphat, his son, reigned in his place. Now, one of the things that Asa did was that he went to the Aramites. He went to the king of Aram and made a deal for them to come fight with him against the Israelites from the north. And later, a prophet is going to call him on that and say, "You should have trusted God for that. And again, you went to your enemies. Again, you went to foreign kings in your fight against your brethren." Even Asa, 41 years of doing good, every once in a while, human beings being human beings, have a tendency to trust in men and have a tendency to think, "We can do this by our own might. Maybe I can make a deal. Maybe I can make a league. Maybe I can make some kind of cooperative thing, and then we can solve this problem." When in fact, the solution is always go to God. If I can have 5 more minutes, we'll just finish this chapter. Okay?
Sure.
We started a couple minutes late. And if these messages don't go quite an hour, I hear about it on the internet. People write to me on the internet and they say, "My drive to work is exactly an hour. And last night's message was 55 minutes. And I had 5 minutes of riding in the car with nothing to listen to." And so, you know, if we're 5 minutes short, we may just get April to come up here, sing a song, and dance. Yes, I know. Yes. Just to kind of fill out the time space there. "Let me entertain you." We'll get April. It'll be great. Okay, fine. We are in verse 25 of 1 Kings 15. "Now Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, became king over Israel in the second year of Asa, the king of Judah. And he reigned over Israel for 2 years." So what's happening here in the middle of this chapter is that we're transitioning from the kings of Judah. First, we saw that there was Abijam, who, by the way, speaking of Abijam, I didn't mention this little fact. Every once in a while, you'll see his name written as Abijah. Abijah is a combination of two Hebrew words, Abba, Father, and Yah, God. And so God is my father is his name, which is kind of a good name. Abijah means God is my father. So we read about Abijah and then Asa, and between the two of them, that's 44 years of history for the southern kingdom. During those 44 years, there's a succession of kings in the northern kingdom. And so at verse 25, Jeremiah, who I believe is the author of 1 Kings, turns his attention to the succession of kings in the north. So Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, became king over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah, and he reigned over Israel 2 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he walked in the way of his father and in his sin, which he made Israel sin. Now Baasha, the son of Ahijah of the house of Issachar, conspired against him, and Baasha struck him down at Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines, while Nadab and all Israel were laying siege to Gibbethon. So at the very time that they were fighting, in the middle of all that, Baasha conspired to get rid of the king so that he could become king. So Baasha killed him in the third year of Asa, the king of Judah, and he reigned in his place. And it came about as soon as he was king that he struck down all the household of Jeroboam. He did not leave to Jeroboam any persons alive until he had destroyed them, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by his servant Ahijah the Shilonite. Keep your finger right there. Go backwards to chapter 14 of 1 Kings. Remember this story from 3 weeks ago? That Abijah, the son of Jeroboam, was sick. And Jeroboam said to his wife, "Arise now, disguise yourself." Remember that story? Yeah. Disguise yourself so that the prophet won't know that it's you. Then we read that the prophet was blind anyway. And yet the moment she walks in, the prophet says, "I know who you are. Why did you dress yourself up and come in here like you were going to hide something from me?" And so he says this to her. "Go tell Jeroboam, thus says the Lord God of Israel." This is verse 7 of chapter 14 of 1 Kings. "Because I exalted you from among the people and made you leader over my people Israel, and tore the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to you, yet you have not been like my servant David, who kept my commandments and who followed me with all his heart to do only that which was right in my sight, and also have done more evil than all who were before you, and have gone and made for yourself other gods, molten images to provoke me to anger, and you have cast me behind your back. Therefore, behold, I am bringing calamity on the house of Jeroboam, and I will cut off from Jeroboam every male person, both bond and free in Israel, and I will make a clean sweep of the house of Jeroboam as one sweeps away the dung until it's all gone. Anyone belonging to Jeroboam who dies in the city, the dogs will eat. And he who dies in the field, the birds of the heavens will eat. For the Lord has spoken it. So now arise, go to your house, and when your feet enter into the city, the child will die. And all Israel shall mourn for him and bury him, for he alone of Jeroboam's family shall come to the grave, because in him something good was found toward the Lord God of Israel in the house of Jeroboam. Moreover, the Lord will raise up for himself a king over Israel who shall cut off the house of Jeroboam this day and from now on." So here is God saying he will raise up a king in Israel who will cut off the whole house of Jeroboam. So who does he raise up? A really bad, evil king who becomes king through chicanery and killing the previous king. And then what does that guy do? Exactly what God said he was going to do. Cut off all the house of Jeroboam. Now we're back in chapter 15, verse 29. "And it came about as soon as he was king that he struck down all the household of Jeroboam. And he did not leave to Jeroboam any persons alive until he had destroyed them according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by his servant Ahijah the Shilonite. And because of the sins of Jeroboam, which he sinned, and which he made Israel sin, because of his provocation with which he provoked the Lord God of Israel to anger." That's why God did this. Verse 31, "Now the rest of the acts of Nadab and all that he did, are they not written in the books of the chronicles of the kings of Israel? And there was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days. In the third year of Asa, the king of Judah, Baasha, the son of Ahijah, became king over all Israel in Tirzah and reigned 24 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he walked in the way of Jeroboam and in his sins with which he made Israel to sin. He's an evil king who does nothing good, who God doesn't approve of, and yet God used him to do exactly what God said he was going to do in order to punish the house of Jeroboam. Here is God using the evil of men in order to accomplish his own punishment. The same way that when we began tonight, we saw God bring up the king of Egypt in order to punish Judah for not following after his ways. Here we see God using an evil king who became king through murder and chicanery, and God used him in order to accomplish the prophecy that the whole household of Jeroboam was going to be wiped out. I just don't know how anybody reads the Bible and doesn't come away with God is sovereign. How do you come away with any other conclusion than God is sovereign and he's in charge of human beings and he's in charge of what they do and their decision making and their machinations and their politics and kings and nations? He raises them up and pulls them down and plays them like a great big checkerboard because he is in absolute charge. And that is comforting given the state of the world today. When you look around at what's going on the planet right now, it would be easy to despair. When you see that Netanyahu is coming to speak to Congress at the behest of the Republicans, and then the Democrats even said, well, can we get together with you? And he said no, which I kind of like. I admire the nerve of that man. And everybody's all up in a tizzy because the current leader of Israel wants to come to America. And what does he want to talk about? He wants to talk about the ancient enemies of Israel who are dead set on destroying them. This is what's happening right now in the world.
And Obama's mad and won't speak to him.
Yeah, and Obama's not going to speak to him while he's here. Yeah. So all this stuff we're reading about in 1 Kings seems like ancient history. It's really interesting ancient history. And as you read it and put the pieces together, what you see over and over and over again is that the people who recorded this history kept inserting the details that show you that God was in charge of all of it, because they don't want you to miss the fact that God's in charge of all of it and that God demands his worship and that if you don't worship God, he will punish and correct you. That is thematic all the way through these stories. But at the same time, we're told God is in charge of what goes on in his kingdom, on his planet, in his universe. God is in charge. And to this very day, people don't seem to recognize that while the whole world is looking at the Middle East, because whether it's ISIS or whether it's Jerusalem or whether it's the Palestinian Authority, whether it's Netanyahu, whether it's the whole world is looking at the Middle East because they know the next potential world war starts there. And one more time, God has the whole world looking at the city where he chose to place his name. So all this ancient history we're reading is as current today as it's ever been. And the same God who raised up and took down kings thousands of years ago over there is still in charge of raising up and taking down kings over there today. And he will use Israel's ancient enemies to punish Israel, but he will be faithful because he made a promise to David that there would be a kingdom, there would be an established 12-tribe kingdom, and a son of David is going to sit on a throne in Israel. And that's going to happen. And by the way, I like the fact that God raised up Asa because God made a promise to David. And that makes me think, well, if God could make a promise to a man like David, a sinful, erring man like David, and then God would keep that promise and continue to raise up the occasional good king because he made a promise to David, and that he's ultimately going to send Christ back to establish the kingdom because he made a promise to David. If he would control human history to that degree because of a promise he made to a man, how much more will he control human history because of promises he made to his son?
Amen.
Yeah. It's going to work out exactly the way God said it's going to work out, because he said so. So this stuff that we're looking at now, the crazy machinations and saber rattling that's going on around the world right now, it's going to get worse before it's going to get better. But it's never, ever going to be out of God's control. And for we who are his people, we need to remember that and serve him so that he doesn't have to remind us what it's like to serve men. Serve him. You got it?
Yes, sir.
Yes, indeed.
First Kings is interesting, isn't it? When we started on it, I got a couple of emails from people saying, you know, is that going to be interesting? It's kind of old history. So can you maybe jump forward to Isaiah or something? I think First Kings is fascinating. Because the same God who was in charge there is in charge now. I must stop talking. But I haven't talked in a few weeks. And I'm so excited. I got 20 minutes into this message and I realized, hey, it's working. So I'm happy. I'm a little stuffy, but I can talk.
Glad to see you back in the pulpit.
Oh, well, thanks. Any questions? Any comments? No? We're good? All right. We'll say goodbye to the digital congregation.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this week's lesson. If you would like more information about Grace Christian Assembly or the teaching of God's sovereign grace, please visit us on the World Wide Web at salvationbygrace.org.